woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Shout out to my own Ricky on the board. SP Futures up a buck, Chuck. NASDAQ Futures down 70. We had a big up day yesterday after a down day the day before, so we don't seem to be able to put 2 days together. We're up, down, up, down. Individual stocks, same thing. We can't seem to figure out which of the AI people, the buyers or the sellers or the chips, are going to make out. 2 days ago, it was, or 3 days ago, and 4 days ago, it was Micron in the toilet. Now, yesterday, it bounced back $60, which, again, this is $60 is $70 billion in market cap, so we're flinging big numbers around here. Microsoft, when Micron's up, Microsoft's down the other way around. I mean, it's kind of crazy, and we've had, you know, some people on the show, Mr. Carl, we've had Russell, we've had Kevin Opina, and who the winners and the losers are on this stuff, and it seems to be changing by the day, which is sort of odd. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
I got some sports questions for you.
I'm in Indianapolis today, and there are things that you learn in Indianapolis, like Cleveland's AAA baseball team is here. What do you suppose the name of the baseball team, the AAA Cleveland Cleveland's AAA affiliate is in Indianapolis?
They don't use the Guardians all the way down?
They do not. They are the Indianapolis Indians.
Really?
Yep.
I actually don't have a problem with that. How do they get away with it?
It's AAA. They're kind of off the radar.
Ah, have you ever gone to a game?
I did not. No, and then I might have gone last night. I did look into it, but they were not home. I think they're home this weekend though. But I'm not going to stick around just for a AAA game. I'm going home tonight.
No, if I ever. Well, Des Moines kind of a ways, but I was going to say I'd like to see one of the Cubs AAA. I've never even seen a AA. I've seen I think I saw one at Toledo. I think I saw the Toledo Mudhens play one night.
I get their higher level, the Cubs higher level Class A in South Bend, so I do get to see some of their young prospects once in a while. And I don't get out enough because he invites me all the time. But my buddy Joe's a senior season ticket holder for them. And
how many games do they play? There's a stupid question.
Always tapped into the prospects for the Cubs.
How many games does a single A team play at home? Well, I mean, total. And I'm sure.
I have no idea. A lot.
But I mean, it's not 161. It's probably like 100. They're over by Labor Day, aren't they? They must, because the guys
pretty come much, up. Yeah. I think they probably have some playoffs after Labor Day, but by and large, yeah, their regular season is done in time. But there's not that many call ups from Class A, so
that's true. All right, I watched the late Dick Butkus naming his five very special players that he remembers. Who do you think they are?
That Dick Butkus remembers?
Yeah.
Well, probably somebody on the Packers that he used, or the Lions. Wasn't the center on the Lions a big rival of Butkus's, and Butkus used to like to beat him up?
He hated him in college. In pro. I think his name was Flanagan, wasn't it?
John Flanagan, wasn't it?
No, but those he used to
our guy Flanny.
When the game was winding down, he would call timeout just so he could hit him again.
Just so he could pop him again, yeah.
Anyway, he had Bob Lilly.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Jim Brown.
Of course.
Gale Sayers.
Yeah.
This one was kind of a surprise, because out of the fearsome foursome, I don't know if I thought he was the best. He liked Deacon Jones.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
Although I actually thought Merlin Olsen might have been better, but they're both awful good. And Walter Payton, he thought, was a class by himself, because he could do so much the entire game. But he said Jim Brown, for a guy his size, said it wasn't the speed, it wasn't anything, he just was so fluid. His timing, it's interesting. Butkus is pretty was pretty straightforward on stuff. He goes, if you're a linebacker, it's all about timing. It's all about intercepting the play. And he goes, Jim Brown was an absolute, in addition to being big, strong, fast, and mean, he said he basically had the incredible sixth sense to wait a tenth of a second and throw your timing off. He goes, that's a talent that very few people have. They just
it's the ability to read. You see that in some basketball players, you see that in some hockey players, it really any sport, I'm sure. You probably could even see it in a sport like tennis, where a guy may just have enough hesitation or enough variance in there to keep somebody off balance. But certainly in any of the motion sports where you have a lot of movement, I don't imagine it shows up in golf, though.
No, I think it surely shows up in soccer.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
When you see these guys, some guys just kick the ball at the net and just jam it into a defenseman. Other guys, the guys that seem to be terrific, they seem to just miss the defenseman and just make the goal. It's bizarre.
Yeah, or just the guys dribbling, in soccer, where some guys can maintain possession, keep the other guy off balance. It's really crazy, and then other guys not so much.
Well, I have two other sports questions, if you don't mind, and then we'll dive into all the other good stuff that's going.
Fire away.
Two things here. One of them, and this one, I don't know if is this all marketing, Kevin. I don't really care how you do stuff, but I think the reason why all of us do this in the show in the morning is we have some sort of a, even though we fight about it all the time, we have some idea that the truth kind of means something. maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, I don't know. But when you see all these guys, everybody you talk to now, especially people that have never played baseball, well, I haven't played that much baseball, I played a lot of softball, but everybody, the reason why the hitters can't hit, everybody's throwing 100 miles an hour. Nobody ever threw like this before. 15 years ago, God's sake, everybody's throwing 85, 890. You couldn't, those guys.
Yeah, they used to talk about 90 mile an hour fastballs being something.
Yeah,
now it's a weak arm.
Well, here, this is any baseball pitchers throw faster than Aroldis Chapman before speedometers were introduced. This is Aroldis Chapman's 105.8 mile per hour record was measured the exact instant the ball left his hand. When Nolan Ryan was clocked at 100.9 miles an hour in 1974, the ball had already been slowing down for 40 feet. The discrepancy comes down to how modern technology operates. Today's StatCast systems track a baseball seed at the release point, roughly 50 feet from home plate. This captures the ball at its absolute peak velocity. Because of air resistance, a baseball loses 6-8% of its speed during its flight. A pitch that leaves the hand at 100 miles an hour slows down to about 91 by the time it reaches the catcher's mitt. Before the widespread use of radar tracking, pitch speeds were measured closer to the plate, capturing the ball at its slowest point. When Ryan set his official Guinness World Record in August 1974, he was clocked by a Rockwell International radar system, whatever the hell that was. I know what Rockwell is. Setup captured the ball speed when it was roughly 10 feet from home plate. If Ryan's ball was still traveling 100.9 at the end in flight, they figured when it left his hand, it was a 108.1, comfortably beating Chapman. An even older record belongs to Bob Feller. In 1946, Bob Feller was tested at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, of all places, using military Lumaline chronographs. Kevin, you have any idea what those are? Lumaline chronographs? Feller was clocked at 98.
Oh, everybody has one of those.
Yeah. Feller was clocked at 98.6 miles an hour, but this measure was taken as the ball crossed home plate. Factoring in the aerodynamic drag over 60 feet of flight, Feller's release point velocity translates to roughly 107.6. So all these guys that are throwing 100 now, I'm not, obviously there's a difference, Kevin. I think you and I would agree that you bring in guys to only throw as hard as you can for 20 pitches. That has changed in baseball compared to what guys used to do. We know that. But the fact is, 100 miles an hour right now is 91 20 years ago. So it's not like everybody's throwing the ball 10 miles an hour faster, like everybody would want you to believe, marketing-wise, in baseball. And really, no reason for a guy to strike out 100 times, if you ask me. But, you know, that's just me.
Well, those are two separate issues. But in the case of the guys throwing hard, I think there are more guys throwing that hard nowadays, and that's part of that's the max effort. Part of that is pitching mechanics and what people have learned about pitching mechanics, and part of that is the kind of strength and conditioning work that they do now. That's a science as much as it is your effort doing the workouts. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. Does that mean they're as fast as Feller, whose nickname was
Rapid Robert, wasn't it?
Rapid Robert, yep. So were they faster than a Bob Feller or Nolan Ryan? Doesn't really matter. There's just a lot more guys throwing that hard, and it's damn hard to hit it. As far as the strikeouts, yeah, I think you're, and you may be seeing some resurgence of contact. You have to look no farther than in Chicago, Pete Crow Armstrong, who at the beginning of the year and for a lot of last year, I was calling Pete Crow Baez because he was swinging at damn near everything, much like Javier Baez did. And I always considered Javier Baez to be a lot of wasted ability because he didn't have any plate discipline and because, you know, he didn't have any patience. And you know, there at some point it really kicked in with Crow Armstrong this year, and there's two things that I see happen. One is he is more willing to accept a walk. In fact, he has walked, I think he's now like 7 or 8 more walks at this point already this year than he had all of last year. So he's not chasing as many bad pitches. But the other thing that I've been really happy to see with him is he's up an inch on the bat. You know, he's not pulling it down, you know, with a finger wrapped around the knob anymore. So he has a lot more control over his swing.
Why do you think a guy like...
I think you're seeing that being coached to a lot more players, because especially when you have a great athlete like he is, that there is way more value. There is value to him hitting the ball out of the park. There's always value to hitting the ball into the stands. But there is a lot of value and wasted value if he's not getting on base because he's so fast and he's such a good base runner that when he's not hitting the ball out of the park, being on base has tremendous value for him, more so than most. And that would be also guys like Ohtani, like Bobby Witt, a number of players like that are out there today. And I think you're starting to see a new emphasis in baseball on guys getting on base. It's all on base percentage has been valued for a long time. That's the whole money ball theory. But I think you're starting to see that with the power hitters. And the idea that when you have speed, when you're a great athlete and you hit with power, you still want to make sure that you make contact, because when you make contact with the ball, you actually have a chance to get on base. And often enough, what you do with your outs too, when you make an out that advances a base runner, a productive out is way better than a strikeout. So you know these kinds of things. I think baseball is relearning that.
Well, plus strikeouts are really boring.
Crash Davis said they're fascist.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I remember. Little League. I was kind of a big kid, and I pitched, and it was basically strikeout or walk. Nothing could have been more boring. It was boring to me, for God's sake, and I was pitching. But real quick, because I want to dive into. We have to talk about your guys, and since you were named all over the radio about the Pell Grant stuff, if you want to. But I have one more question. This is for you, stat guys. I mean, you modern stat guys. here's a guy who's considered the best fielder in Major League history. I would not have picked his name up there, even though I know he was a terrific defense player. Mark Belanger, according to this guy, finished an 18-year career with a dismal .228 batting average and just 20 home runs, but yet advanced statistics, which I can't figure out. How do you do advanced statistics from a guy who pitched 50 years ago? Yet advanced, or played shortstop. Yet advanced statistics say he might be the greatest fielder in baseball history. Major League Baseball has seen incredible defensive talents across all positions, blah, blah, blah. You know, Brooks Robinson turned the third base line into a black hole. Andrew Jones played incredibly shallow, tracking down fly balls in center field, which nobody could do. At shortstop, Ozzie Smith. By the way, Jim Landis was pretty good at that, too, and so is Pete Crow. At shortstop, Ozzie Smith became a cultural icon for his acrobatics. However, a Belanger who spent the vast majority of his career with the Baltimore Orioles played the ultimate defensive purist choice. 8 gold gloves, blah, blah, blah. But him's down. This is where I need you. Defensive war. Ozzie Smith holds the all-time record for career D-war at 442, 44.2, but Belanger's sitting in second place at 39.5. However, Smith accumulated his total over 2,500 games, while Belanger played in only 2,000. On a rate basis, measuring defensive impact per inning played, whatever in God's name that is, Belanger was significantly more efficient. Now, here's one I have no idea what this is. Total zone runs. This metric calculates how many runs a player saved compared to an average fielder. Belanger's numbers show he saved an astonishing 238 runs over his career, making him arguably the most statistically impactful run preventer per game in baseball history. What in the hell is that, Kevin?
Say that again?
Total zone runs.
Yeah.
This metric calculates how many runs a player saved compared to an average fielder. Belanger's numbers show he saved an astonishing 238 runs over his career, making him arguably the most statistically impactful net run preventer per game in baseball history. This is the same statistic they keep lobbing at Pete Crow. I'm sorry, I have no idea. How do you know? Going back, I saw the guy, it's my senior year in college, I saw the guy play shortstop in 1974 in Lauderdale. How does anybody know whether or not he got a ball in 1974 somebody else wouldn't have got? I think the guy's really good. I get that part. But
I don't know how much of that is trackable and how they track it. That would be interesting. I mean, certainly there's a lot of video. Because in Belanger's day, just about every game was on TV locally. So you can probably do something there. Otherwise, if you're just looking at stat sheets, I don't know how you know exactly where he picked the ball, but okay, we'll go with that. You certainly can compare him to other shortstops in terms of, you know, how many batted balls he got, but that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't perfectly tell you that that he got batted balls, you know, 10 feet away from him, where other guys only got batted balls 7 feet away from him. So that would be part of it. But, you know, to the extent that there's video, I am sure there's some extrapolation out of that as to, you know, what we saw elsewhere. And, you know, and that's fine. I remember Belanger. He was terrific. In fact, he played that long because he was such a good shortstop.
Oh, yeah.
Not because he was hitting. So, you know, that there was an understanding from the Earl Weaver days that that his defense meant runs prevented. Whether it was innate, they didn't have the same measurements available to him, but there was certainly a realization.
But didn't he play next to Brooks?
You can get pretty specific about it. Like, I've seen a couple of Dansby Swanson catches in the last week that definitely kept runs off the board.
Didn't he play? Who's the second baseman he played next to was spectacular. Somehow or another, can't get in the Hall of Fame. Is that Whitaker?
No, Lou Whitaker is on Detroit. You're thinking Bobby Gritch?
Yeah. I said did he play next to Brooks Robinson?
Yeah.
So that was one hell of an infield.
Yes, it was.
And they also had terrific pitching that I think pitched to contact. So, I mean, there was a lot of ground balls coming their way. Wasn't it the million-dollar force rotation?
They had one season when four guys won 20 games.
That was with Milt Pappas?
That was in the era of four-man pitching rotations.
Yeah.
So.
Wasn't Milt Pappas was one of those guys, right?
I don't think it was Pappas. It was...
Palmer was one.
It certainly would have been Palmer. It was McNally. It was... oh shoot, it would have been well,
Steve Stone won a Cy Young there, but he wasn't one of those four, I don't think.
He wasn't one of the four. Let's see. Let's do this. Four Orioles.
I thought Milt Pappas was one of those guys, one of the years. Maybe before he came to the Cubs. I can't imagine, Kevin, even though a lot of people seem to have nothing to do as we went through the labor numbers. I can't. Yeah.
Others were Pat Dobson and Mike Cuellar.
That's right.
Dave McNally, Jim Palmer, Mike Cuellar, Pat Dobson.
You can't really think that people are going back and watching a full season of baseball from 1975, do you?
With today's computer technology, you know, you can call it AI, or you can just call it, high speed computing and computing processing. You can run all that video into a. And have it analyzed, and that can be done, you know, in minutes.
I'm thinking back before the Cubs became the nationwide station. I don't think those videos are all kept by all those stations.
I don't know. I don't know, Tom. That would be a good question, because it all would have been taped. So it could all be sitting in somebody's tape library somewhere, and whether anybody ever had it digitized or not, I don't know.
All right, hey, tell us about the Pell Grants. When I heard that the other day, the only thing that pissed me off is they didn't use your name.
Oh, well, I told you about this a long time ago. This was
It started last week. It was big news in Illinois. That's why I'm lobbing up.
It was big news because, it was effective July 1st. But these are workforce Pell Grants. It seems to me there's a need base to it. I'm trying to remember all the details off the top of my head. It has to be in a condensed period of time, so it's not something where, it's not the standard Pell Grant that would apply to somebody chasing a degree and throughout the whole degree process. This is just to develop some very, very specific workforce skills that are needed to ramp up a manufacturing and an IT economy. So you have a lot of people doing welding programs, doing advanced automation, doing robotics stuff, and then you can get into IT skills. So from what we're doing, we're addressing the more of the manufacturing specific skills at the moment at Ivy Tech. But we'll probably roll into some of the IT stuff early into next year, and that would include data center preparation, for people to go work in data centers, cabling, fiber splicing, you name it, all of those kinds of skills that you need, in addition to learning how to use manufacturing equipment, advanced manufacturing equipment, and so on.
Now, when you say grant,
the whole idea is if you're going to bring manufacturing back on shore, that you better have a workforce ready to handle it.
All right, so when you say a grant, I show up and I go, hey, I don't want to manage money anymore, which would never happen, but I want to become something. I want to be an auto mechanic or whatever it happens to be. When you say a grant, I apply and the tuition is $1,000. I get $1,000. I get $500. I get $800. Is any of it a loan, or is it all just a grant?
Yeah, it's generally, as far as I know, this is how it's going to be driven by the organization offering the training. So all those arrangements will be handled, but basically it's going to cover the entire cost. Like I said, it's need based, so there's not everybody's going to qualify, but that doesn't stop others from taking the training. But what you're going to see is the institution offering the training is going to say, okay, in response to this availability of grant money, here is a program that we are offering. Sign up now. I think there's going to be a lot of colleges, community colleges especially, who are going to be on the straight and narrow. What I would, of course, worry about is are there going to be all of these organizations that pop up to start offering specific, you know, specifically offer this kind of training? And are they going to get certified based on political connections? And is it going to be rife with fraud? So I think that's something to watch as it pertains to this. Is Kevin's training going to Kevin's advanced manufacturing training going to pop up, and then we will open our own advanced manufacturing Learing Center, and see how much money we can grab before anybody figures out that we aren't training anybody.
Well, it's hope. But I mean, I guess there's
there's a lot to watch about this. But I think if we're going to spend more money on workforce development, this is all not for credit stuff. This is not working on, getting a degree. Not that some of it won't crosswalk, and give credit for prior learning for those who really would like to move forward with a degree. So that kind of thing is available. But this is really, it's specific termed. It doesn't last forever. I can't remember the duration. But it's got to be done in a matter of months. It's got to be the kind of training that gets done in a matter of months.
Can you? I got a million questions here. I'm trying to figure out which ones are most important. I know there's going to be a bunch of answers here, but how does it normally? Let's take a place I take my truck once in a while. It's a really good mechanics place out in the burbs, and actually they're from the Middle East. These guys, but everybody's like 6'5". They're good guys, and boy. Whoever the guys come in and speak, whatever language they're speaking, they pretty much do this stuff for old guys for free. Anyway, everybody who works there has got a million. They got a bunch of these certificates on the wall from Moraine Valley. Ignition, I did front end alignment. Now, typically, does a manufacturing place / hire somebody, realize they have some kind of a skill, does this guy hire some young guy to come in and start doing oil changes, say? Guy goes, boy, I'd like to learn how to do brakes. Now, do they normally pay for that guy to go to Moraine Valley so the guy can put his shingle up on the wall? So if the guy's doing your brake, you can look up there and see, hey, my guy's certified to do brakes. Typically, the manufacturing places, are they paying for it now? Are the people paying for it now before they get hired? Or a blend of all of the above?
Well, they're not paying for it because because it's part of a grant program.
No, what I'm saying right now, who's paying for it? Is it usually the company or the person or
a combination of things? So you will see people who will be doing some skill up type of training on their own time and on their own dollar. Now, I can speak for the state of Indiana. The state of Indiana has long had and actually they're sort of curtailing eligibility a little bit, but they've long had what's called a Workforce Ready Grant, and that focused on a handful of areas that the state has been wanting to develop for its own economy. So it doesn't pay for everybody, but you can come and get an academic credential at a place like Ivy Tech. Or other colleges, and you get yourself an academic credential, and the state would pay for it. Your eligibility was you couldn't already have a college degree, so this was for people who didn't have a college degree, and you couldn't, and you had to be a legal resident with the right to work in the state of Indiana. So that affected immigrant eligibility is basically what it did. So, in that case, the areas of focus were advanced manufacturing, information technology, business, logistics and supply chain management. I feel like healthcare fields like nursing and such. I may be leaving one out. I'm not sure, but that was covered, and that would cover your tuition and all of your mandatory course fees. So if there were certification fees and such, you could do that. So you'd get a lot of people who would be going back to school, on their own time, just to skill up a little bit and then be able to make more money. And this is a very similar type of program. So if you look at it, this one the workforce Pell grants. This is a federal program now. It can't last more than 15 weeks, so the duration's supposed to be somewhere between 8 and 15 weeks. There are a number of clock hours that are involved in there, too, so there's got to be at least 150 and no more than 599 hours of instruction.
So you're talking 10 hours a week for 15 weeks. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And we're working like with the Indiana Workforce Development, the state of Indiana's Workforce Development Department, and I just visited a couple of days ago with the guy who is the veterans liaison. So you might get people coming off of active duty who would participate in this. So you have that, the institution, the state, there's a bunch of hurdles they have to have approved, including the state, the state board of governors has to sign off on this. It's got to be for aligned with in-demand industries. There is a performance requirement. So as I'm looking at this, it says there has to be at least a 70% completion rate and a 70% placement rate within 180 days of graduation. Well, so it won't be allowed to continue if you're not successfully training people, and if you're not successfully placing them in jobs, you'll get cut off, that's good. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, but if somebody piles out of high school and gets a job at some manufacturer, wherever, it could be a manufacturing place, could be in a hospital, it could be something, and all of a sudden they'll take some basic computer courses, or it'll take some of your more advanced supply chain management. So the person's working his way up in that sort of curriculum. Maybe even somebody who does some nursing stuff and then takes some computer stuff on top of it. And they do this for a couple of years, and most of it, I use the term, which is foolish, I use the term like kind of blue-collar stuff. And all of a sudden somebody says, maybe I should go to Purdue South Bend or someplace. Is any of the stuff that you teach, this is not trying to sound bad, the computer stuff, is any of that applicable to a four-year degree?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, we have, depending on the credential you earn, first of all, you get an associate's degree that is specifically engineered to be fully transferable to a four-year college.
I'm talking about somebody who doesn't do that, somebody who just, whatever they need to do to get the next promotion or whatever, they take a skill set for that. Maybe it's computers, maybe it's marketing.
So you might come to us for a certification, one course for certification, or several courses to get a certificate from us, and maybe several certifications along the way. In information technology, that could be in the supply chain world, getting certifications in things like quality management. You might get a yellow belt or a green belt from us. You might get the you might want to work on a purchasing certification, those kinds of things. Yeah, a lot of people come and they want to get those kinds of certifications. And, we have a warehousing operations, we have a manufacturing operations. We've got all these industry certs that you can earn in addition to college credit for the course. And yes, those will transfer.
How many certifications equal three credits, I guess, is the stupid question I'm trying to ask. I mean, does that person is he going to be 3 years?
Generally, when we're talking about our supply chain course, I can get you a certificate from Ivy Tech with 18 credit hours, so that's six courses. I can get you a certification, for instance, if you're in a warehousing business and you come in and you take our intro to logistics, and I can get you an industry recognized certification that's tied to that course, that's built into the three-hour course. And we do get students who come in and say, cool, I'm glad I got a certification, now I can go back to my work and say, here I am, I'm more marketable now, you want to pay me. So you do run into that. In the IT world, we will generally have three or four credit hours of work, and then a one-credit course that does certification prep.
So somebody could go... Purdue or South Bend, and By the time all this stuff transfers.
There's IU South Bend. There is no Purdue South
Bend. Where's the Purdue thing up there?
Purdue Northwest?
Yeah.
Purdue Northwest over by in Lake County.
Okay, so if I go there after all this negotiating back and forth, they might say, okay, it looks to me like you got 2.5 years to do here and you get your 4 years at 3. I mean, is that the bottom line? You can come out with only, if you really want to pursue your 4-year degree at Indiana, say, do you have 2.5 years left, 3, 2, or any combination of both?
You'll definitely see some of that. When you're in when you're in a non-transfer program, but you have transferable credits, they'll take a lot of the credits. What you're going to be is to go get your bachelor's degree. You're going to be very, very heavy in general education courses. You may have the technical core that you need, plus maybe a couple of other courses, a capstone that they want in the program, something like that. But by the same token, your bachelor's degree is going to require your English comp class. It's going to require a communications class. It's going to require math, algebra, college algebra for sure, and maybe a calculus course. Once you start into working on your bachelor's degree, you have to be thinking beyond the technical skills and say, this is a complete college education. So that's part of it. Now, when you go back to the Workforce Pell Grant, those credentials, they have to be, it's called a stackable credentials requirement. So even though you're taking courses that are not for college credit, they have to be something that can be recognized and transferable to get college credit. Every college has a credit, or not everyone, but most colleges have a credit for prior learning process. We will refer to it as the crosswalk. So, for instance, our intro level quality management course it's a lean course. It has a first level quality management certification called a yellow belt. And if you walk in with a yellow belt and you can demonstrate a yellow belt, then you will pay a small fee and you will get credit for a much smaller fee. And I don't know what the fee is, but it's a much smaller fee than 3 credit hours worth of course. And you will get credit for that course. We also have a lot of military crosswalk, so people who have done certain kinds of work in logistics in the military, and they may have done it for years. We will give credit for that kind of learning, and we're pretty specific about what we, what we take and what experience we take with it.
Well, cool. I'm glad I heard the commercial, because then it made me ask the question. A little bit on this week I've had, because of the Uptown Theater thing the other day, Kevin. I was listening. I don't know if you heard that part of it. My whole idea on this inflation sort of thing, and people have their politics, to me everything's the same subject. Just like the radar guns in baseball, everybody's an expert and nobody knows the difference between how it was, and doesn't want to know the difference between how they did it 30 years ago and how they do it now. But I looked at some of these inflation numbers. Everybody, if you talk to anybody, they say, oh man, what about gasoline? What about, what about food store? Which is important. I mean, I get that part. But I've never seen any time, and again, this is what I do for a living, so I've never seen a more incredible increase in price level in a 5-year period than we've had in the last 5 years. And you've got politicians, depending on who's in office, saying it ain't really so, Joe. But you know what? It is so. And you see it. To be real brief, I was driving in the other morning, and they were talking about the Uptown Theater, and they're going to a total rehab of the place to make it its old grandeur. And the estimate was $150 million, not 20, not 50. Well, last night I was out with a group of people that are pretty damn smart, and I go, okay, guys, what do you suppose the estimate of the Uptown Theater is? Oh, man, $15 million at tops if they really do a good job. Guys, you're one-tenth of the... I don't think people have any idea, Kevin, that a roof can cost you $90,000 right now in a decent house. I mean, one of the guys, the same guy, he just moved out of his condo. He's selling. He got a nice apartment. He's all happy with his new place, but he's fixing up the old place. He goes, Chief, the thing is 870 square feet. The cheapest thing I got for a guy to paint it was $2,100. Where does that come from? I go, hey, what do I tell you? What do I mention every 6 months? It's the inflation you don't even know about yet that is mind-boggling. I mean, if somebody bumps into your bumper, it could be $1,500 to because you don't have a bumper anymore, to rub out the bumper and paint it again. I mean, it's the numbers are astronomical. And, you know, we talk about a lot, and, you know, obviously everybody complains about taxes. Can you imagine, Kevin, how much it costs, like, to redo a bridge now compared to 20 years ago? I mean, these municipalities got to be getting hosed by this. There's a group behind us in our building here. Those guys are redoing. You know where Canal Street is over there by where the Merck was and everything? Well, Canal Street is suspended over the railroad tracks, mostly Amtrak, not the Burlington Northern or anybody. And these guys are redoing Canal Street, and they've been doing it for like 2 or 3 years. And I walk by there, and everybody's on the phone with Amtrak. Wait a minute, what are you guys doing? Someone's going to come down and bonk one of our cars. And the complexity of that job, I can't even imagine what that's costing, Kevin. I mean, what do you suppose it costs to just, you know, repaint a bridge, for God's sake? Now, I mean, this stuff is absolutely astronomical in places where people don't even see it. Because why would you see it? You don't see it. I mean, go have a baby. What do you think that costs? I mean, what are we going to do about this? Because we have absolutely stretching. And I would say that your group is one of the positive people. You're taking somebody from $20 an hour to 30 to 35 to 40 and maybe higher as they start to get into management and so forth. And you're one of the people that are doing this right. And I really believe that. I'll say that to you even if we can argue about something else 2 minutes from now. But $40 an hour right now, that's chump change right now. Kevin, even though it's an amazing improvement over 20, the way this inflation's going, that's not even enough to do anything. I mean, what do you do with that? I mean, I don't think anybody really has their hands around. I'm just starting to get my hands around just what the last three administrations have done. Well, actually go back to Obama. Actually go back to Nixon when he went off the gold standard. Does anybody have any kind of clue what these guys have done to us money-wise?
Well, it's a clue in a number of ways. So, I think when you talk about the price levels, and I really think a lot of people have figured out how to cope with the day in day out price levels.
Yes,
it's still a big stressor, but they've learned to cope with that. And you're right; it is the one timers. You know, I just had somebody do some pretty significant porch repairs at my house, and you know that was a pretty big check I just wrote yesterday for it. So, kind of eye-opening. I expected it because, you know, I knew to expect it because I had a new roof put on the house last year and I knew what that costs. So, those kinds of things, those one-timers that have become necessary for people. And in my case, you know, I could have not done the porch repairs and I would have had a trip hazard, you know, on my property, and sooner or later somebody would have taken a header and I'd be dealing with that instead. So, by the way, that could have been me. As well as a guest at my home. So yeah, I think those one timers are the big shocks now, whether it's a major auto repair, whether it is a major home repair, whatever. Those are the things where people are going, you know, get really stuck at this point. But a lot of that is, you know, and I know on Wednesdays you guys talk a lot about K-shaped recovery. We have hollowed out the middle class by offshoring jobs. There's actually, you know, Carl, I know will be skeptical about this, but at least slightly happy to see that H-1Bs have been in the news, and there's actually some looking into the fraudulent use of H-1Bs now. I'll believe it'll go anywhere when I see it, but at least I'm starting to see it covered.
Kevin, it's obvious.
Starting to see at least one government agency addressing it, but it's more than that. It is how we've systematically hollowed out, you know, by offshoring manufacturing jobs, that we have just killed our middle class, because those middle class jobs are just have dwindled and dwindled and dwindled over the years. And this is that, you know, that whole globalist point of view, and you know, hopefully we're putting some brakes on it. Hopefully, and we are seeing a lot of factory construction and so on going on in this country. We've seen the ISM index be up for 5 or 6 months in a row. That's good. Maybe we will see some progress on that, but until we start making things in this country more than we have been, we are going to have this hollowed out middle class that is unable to cope with anything.
I'm absolutely not going to disagree that that is one part of the issue. I think, and I'll argue with him about it probably pretty soon, it's something that people focus on when maybe they could be focusing on other stuff as well. I'm not saying that the offshoring these jobs was a good thing or it didn't hurt people. I know that. But I also know...
Well, it's been going on since...
I understand, but...
I don't
know. But, I mean, we got to be careful. I think we as a group, certainly on the show, because we're smart enough, I think, we have to be careful to not focus in on our own pet problem, okay? Whether it's the immigration, whether it's this, I think a massive part of the problem, and if I got to get Eric back on, he said he would, he's feeling a lot better. He's convinced that this managerial class, whoever they are, is stealing all the dough from everybody else. And when I was at Pump,
that's the senior level managerial class. You also have this other manager class through the ranks. There was and this is probably a 10-year-old article now by a woman named Joan C. Williams, very, very liberal woman, you know, workers' rights advocate, but she wrote a great article about what people don't understand about the working class, and one of the big things is that they said, yeah, we get these college kids, you know, college people, college-educated people come in as management, and they don't know shit about what we do every day, and yet they're perfectly willing to tell us how to do it.
Well,
and that's the beginnings of your manager class, and that's the people that you that will climb the corporate ladder over years and become that that overpaid management class that you're discussing.
But they somehow or another, and it has to do with who controls the press, and I'm not going to go into that, whether it's Soros or God knows who. The fact is, you can perfectly have somebody on TV say that, what's her name, the lady who runs at GM, if there's some kind of a labor dispute, I mean, she can with her bare face can come on there and talk about, oh, we can't pay these guys more than $1 an hour, and nobody ever turns around and says, by the way, how much do you make? I mean, it's the when I was at Pullman, when it's not the place but it was the time, and by the way, Japan is still kind of like this. I'm not saying I want to move to Japan, but the average CEO made 20 to 25 times a line worker. Now what is that, Kevin? 200 times? And, you know, it's that, I mean, what do you think?
Even more when you consider the outsourced part of the company.
Yeah, yeah, and
the offshore part of the company.
I mean, I would say that if you took, say, a monopolist, my favorite whipping person, Commonwealth Edison, I would bet if you and I, we'll make Carl help us because he likes to do this kind of stuff. If we looked at the top 100 executives there and compared them to executives any other place, except maybe another monopoly, I'm going to say they're, 50%, 100% more than anybody else makes. I mean, I don't think it's even close, not to mention the private airplanes and all the other crap that goes with it. I mean, I don't see how, and I think, I mean, everybody poo-poos me and think I'm totally not. I think part of it has to do, Kevin, with the way corporate boards are set up. The idea that you know, they pick the board. That we need another system there. I don't know what the solution is, but one of the solutions, I think, is to have raise the prices of corporate taxes. Nobody wants to pay any more taxes, but make dividends deductible. The people we're talking about, Kevin, that own the stocks, and maybe the stock could appreciate and go right back down. That's a problem. But I think if all of a sudden the dividends paid in this country went up by a factor of four, I think a lot of those people are going to start spending money on stuff because they now have some dough instead of stock appreciation. I mean, I think that when do the owners get anything? I mean, name me a company that actually cares about it. There's traditional companies that pay dividends. I'm not saying there aren't, but it's only because they used to do it and they're stuck doing it. Because if you ask them today, they don't want to give money to perfect strangers, do they? And every time you write out a dividend check, I mean, I don't want to be gross here, but if you walked into a Meta or Tesla or any of these places tomorrow, and all these guys got nothing but bonuses, including Elon, my favorite guy, and you were to say, I think we should declare a $10 dividend, you might as well blow off 10 stink bombs in that office. What do you mean? my option isn't worth squat if we start paying a dividend. Okay.
Well, that might be your solution, is to blow off stink bombs in the office. That could work.
Yeah.
And especially if you do it every day. I know Carl unmuted and then remuted, but he did have something to say. So, Carl, you should jump in on the topic.
Oh, all right. I'll jump in. All right. Well, you did ask for it, so here it comes.
This will teach us a lesson, too.
Well, perhaps. Chief? All of this stuff that you guys have been talking about, and you're absolutely right when it comes to the inflation and the cost of living and what it's done. All right, you have many times when you and I have gotten into these kinds of discussions, you have said, but the people in Weimar who own farms made out like bandits because all of a sudden they were able to pay their mortgage off with a wheelbarrow full of printed Deutsche Marks. And therefore, now they own the land free and clear. And therefore, there's Winterson. Okay. In this land that occurred, and I've pointed out why this is not a model that is in fact true in the modern world.
Wait a minute. You're the first guy who talks all the time about people who can borrow under the rate of inflation.
Whoa, hold on. They didn't do any borrowing, okay? All right, here is where I'm going with this. All right, so it is true that they did that. But in Weimar, Germany, when they did that, they didn't have 4% of the inflated value in today's currency numbers that was due every year in the form of a property tax. And therefore, yes, they paid off the mortgage, but they didn't have any way to make the money to pay the property tax, and they got foreclosed on, and it was sold at a tax sale anyway.
I don't know about that.
Hold on. Oh, really? Shall I look up my old house up there?
You had a house in Weimar, Germany?
Oh, I had a house up in right near Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago. Okay. And I'm going to see if I can get it to come up here. Maybe I can and maybe I can't, because it's the fun part of this is let's see, doesn't want to show up. I'm going to have to bring it up the hard way.
Well, I mean, a lot of things happened to Germany after the Weimar. It could have caused the guy to lose the farm. I get that.
I understand that. But here is my entire point with all of this, okay? You are assuming that there is an answer to this other than crashing the price of these inflated prices. Which, by the way...
Well, the only two ways to do it, Carl, are somehow stop it here and over the next 10 years grow into it.
Very difficult.
I just said, there are two ways. The other is to crash the thing. Okay, I used to hope that we could do number one. Now, if you would let me, I'd come over to your side and say, I don't think number one's doable anymore. I'm moving that way, but can you let me, at least hope for a little while?
No. And you know why? Because if you keep doing it, what's going to end up happening?
The reason why I'm moving your way is because we've been talking about it for 6 years and it ain't happening.
Well,
if we'd have started 6 years ago, I might have had a chance.
Well, lots of things would be nice, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that would be nice if they could happen. But facts are facts, and we can't get there from here, and that's just the way it is. And so it doesn't make any difference whether you like it or not. It's totally irrelevant. Totally effing irrelevant. Look, I understand what people would like to have happen. That doesn't mean you can have it.
Well, no matter what you do, you have to stop it from happening today. I mean, you and I can argue, but they're not. It's getting worse.
Absolutely. I'm not.
Well, we're talking about it, and I'll use one because everybody's familiar with the names. I have no idea when Trump bought Doral, but he's just a name. It's a resort. I stayed there a couple times. You know, the course is very hard. By the way, it's hotter than hinges of hell there. They give you your own rake. They put a rake in your cart. There's so many sand traps. So you don't have to find one on the course. You got your own. You know what's most fascinating about that place? You're right on the glide path for the Miami International Airport.
Right.
And this was 20 years ago. So all the planes coming there, you never saw planes like that from any place. There were 707s. There were DC-3s. There was stuff from, like, Columbia. You look at it and you go, that looks like it's a Miami Vice plane coming in with drugs on it. But
yeah,
you don't see any of that at all here. Anyway, but my point being, if a regular businessman, let's say, what you buy the place, you get a loan. Now, of course, it was kind of in disrepair. So, you know, I'm not saying Trump didn't spend any money to fix it up. He did. But now, if you get that rate at 6 or 7%, which maybe he could have, and the room rates, I'm going to say, were 180 a night. Well, now they're probably 500 a night. So whatever right. whatever the nut is on the mortgage is a pimple on the ass of the elephant on the day that he signed the mortgage, right? Because of the inflation along the way. If the mortgage payment was 100 grand a month, it's still 100 grand a month. And I have to right. believe the revenue on the place has gone up five times in 20 years or 15 years. So, I mean, it's an amazing advantage if you're one of those people. Now, granted, if 3 years into it, all of a sudden we had some huge recession and nobody showed up, they could have foreclosed on him. I mean, it's not a freebie. But
okay, Chief, just to give it by way of example, one of the reasons I left Illinois was that I saw this coming, okay? I just found the house. I had to go on Zillow and dig in because... Now, don't ask me why punching in the address didn't work, but it didn't. I had to actually look at the map, but since I knew where it was, duh, I lived there. Okay, that wasn't very hard. 2024's property taxes. Take a wild guess at what they are.
The lady...
It's a Deerfield address.
Right, the Maria Pappas said that the I'll make a stab at this. The property taxes in Illinois and probably a lot of states have gone up twice the CPI for over 25 years. So if it was 20 years ago and you were paying $5,000, which if you just look at the CPI should be $7,200 today, I'm going to say it's $12,000.
$24,413.
Well, and what did you pay?
Well, I'd have to go back and look at the last year.
I'll bet you were paying $7,000.
Yeah, that'd probably be about right. About six. I think it's about six.
Yeah.
25. And by the way, that's 24 because, you know, 25 is not in the computer yet. It will be. Now, here's the problem. No, of course, you know, it was a very nice house. Right?
And what do you think your insurance is? It's got to be triple.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Not more. Okay. Now, the premise behind this, why is it that someone thinks, think about what you have to have, if I was to just make payments on this place, okay, including the mortgage and the property tax, you know, in the escrow, right, the property tax, escrowed back, I bet you, I'm willing to bet that there is no way that I could actually buy that place and live in it for less than $8,000 a month.
Yeah, well, we have Nancy on every other Monday talking
about... Well, that's nearly $100,000 a year, Chief.
Well, she I said, what if the rate goes from 6 to 6.25? She goes, It doesn't matter. My first question right now is, where do you live and what are the taxes?
Well, exactly. But all right, so here's the problem. If you don't crash prices, all right, and by the way, I know this isn't what you and your clients want to hear, because you know what the leverage factor is in the market when it comes to equity.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, take a look at price to sales. Duh, right? If you don't crash prices, you can't solve this problem. It's impossible. Now, let me give you just an example.
All right. Well, just in one, by the way, just to show that you're right. I shouldn't do this to you. Just to show you're right. Just to show that you're right. I think it was 2021. I had some day where it was snowing. I had nothing better to do. So I dug up like three or four areas. Because, you know, and it was, I mentioned this before, but it's been a while. And I did some sloppy calculations.
Right.
If you looked at the, and this is off the top of my head here, so I could be wrong, from 2000 to 2020 or 2021 when I was doing this, the CPI was up, whatever it was up 0.85%, whichever, 85. So everything that costs a buck now costs a buck 85, right? So whatever time period I used, I don't remember if I used 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it was. And I said, okay, let's pick three things that really affect people like a real lot, not gas or chicken or whatever, which it does, but because you're staring at it every day. I picked college education. It was up 285%, not 85%. I went to get primary education. Now, this is sloppy, but I looked at the property taxes, because property taxes are roughly 50% education, right? At least in Illinois.
Well, it depends on the state, but yes.
No, no, I'm saying, reasons, okay, so
I live in Tennessee because it's not, but yeah.
Okay, so guess what? Exact same number, 285%. Then I said, what about hospitalization? And of course, I can't get a grip on that so much, but I looked at, and I said, okay, now what is really the cost to me or PTI Securities? What is a firm used to pay, I'll say 2000 or 2020, but I'm not sure that was over the years. What does a firm have to pay in monthly insurance costs for a typical employee? Now we're cheating on this, because as time went by, people upped the deductible for people and maybe pulled dental out of there or something just to keep the thing in the room. You know what? The thing that stunned me the most, Colonel, exact same number, 285.
Yeah.
So here's three things that really affect people. They were up 285%, and the CPI said it should be like 85 or 90%. I don't know which I was more stunned at, the size of the number or the fact that all three of them are equal.
Well, okay, so here's now. You zoomed in with your lens on three things that accelerated at a much higher rate than did wages or, you know, any other kind of reasonable thing that could serve to compensate for that in the average person's life.
Right.
Right? All right. And now, let's back the lens out. Let's zoom back out. How did that happen? Because classical economic theory tells you that's impossible.
No, it doesn't. Not with the CPI going up 8% a year.
Well,
not the CPI, money supply.
No. Classical economic theory tells you that that's impossible, because in order for that to happen, if the money supply goes up by that amount, the only way that those books, remember, you know, double entry bookkeeping is not a suggestion. Okay, for every debit there's a credit somewhere. Your goal is to make them, is to find out where the other entry is supposed to go, so that the ledger balances at the end of the month. The classical economic theory says it's impossible, because a person ultimately has to pay every price in the economy. Ultimately, a person has to pay the price, whatever the price is, for whatever the thing is. Therefore, that person has to earn somehow the funds in order to pay that price. Thus, what you described shouldn't be able to happen unless the average wage level, the average income level, has risen by that amount. Now, clearly it has not. All right? The books do not balance based upon that, and yet they must. So how did it happen? And the answer is that everybody in the country was forced to take upon themselves the debt burden, and in a generally, in order to make the books balance, and in a generally declining rate environment, you can do this. How? Well, if I won't take on the leverage personally, you can make me do it by having the government take it on. By the way, I didn't consent to that, but unless I'm willing to go shoot people, I can have that rammed down my throat. Now, here's the problem with this paradigm. Rates are cyclical. On a secular basis, they are cyclical. They always have been. Way before America existed and all the way through America existing. But Chief, you were not 15, 16, 18 years of age in
1944. I was a gleam in anybody's eye by then.
I was going to say, somebody hadn't yet, glinted, a man hadn't yet glinted at a woman and said, off come the clothes.
I don't think they even met yet, so.
I'm just saying, okay? All right. And yet, that is where the last upward turn happened in American history.
Actually, I watched a YouTube thing last night. It said it happened on a Sunday night in 1971 when Nixon went off the gold standard.
Wrong.
Right.
Wrong. And I can show you the charts.
Okay.
You're wrong. It happened in 1944.
Well, all right, but we...
Okay. No,
wait. Did we temporarily go off the gold standard during the war? I think we did.
This has nothing to do with the gold standard. I'm talking about the general... Not in one place or another, because you can always cherry pick things, and people always do when they're trying to run some load of shit. I am talking about the general rate cycle in the economy. And by the way, it wasn't just in the United States. People think that we are somehow, that we can isolate ourselves or we're insulated from the rest of the developed world. That's a load of crap. If you look at the British, which of course at the time they were the other big power, right, in the developed world.
Yeah,
you'll see that it's approximately in the shape is approximately aligned in the same place time-wise. All right, why? Because this is part of a chondritis cycle, and it repeats when the last guy who went through it the last time is dead. And we are now in that phase. We have left the generally declining rate environment phase. We left it. Should have been allowed to correct in 2008. It wasn't. And Bernanke specifically warned Congress that while he could play this game with their consent and with their active involvement, so anyone that says that this was just the Federal Reserve, and if we abolish the Federal Reserve, we would solve this problem. No, you won't, because the 535 clowns who have made it their business to deliberately screw you, and yet 98% of them get reelected.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So this, it's not my guy. Actually, it's all 535 of them. And unless the people of this country were willing to hang them, it was not going to stop. Well, guess what? We weren't. It didn't stop. But now you are up against something that is not able to be repealed. It is not able to be overridden. And the consequence of it has already shown up in federal borrowing costs, in interest payments. Now, we can continue to play this game if we want to try, but the result of it will be that those interest payments at the federal level are going to crowd out every single additional thing that you want to spend money on to try to continue the bubble economics that all works in a generally declining rate environment. Yes, there are times that rates go up in a generally declining rate environment, but it's 5% of the time. When the cycle goes the other way, yes, there are times that rates go down in a generally increasing rate environment, but it's 5% of the time. And therefore, if you are dependent on being able to turn that crank, you are going to get destroyed. Now, we only have two options to deal with this. The only way you can survive as a business or as a nation is for what you do to be profitable cash on cash, not based on what you put down as a down payment or whatever have you. No, truly cash on a cash accounting basis, cash on cash. You have to be able to make a profit cash on cash from your economic surplus of your activity. And if you can't, you're going to go bankrupt. We are only arguing over how long it's going to take. If you remember, you know, Trump is, you know, Sir Great Property Developer.
But the difference is the winners and the losers.
Chief, the game doesn't work anymore once the crank goes the other
way.
That's the problem.
All right.
Trump got himself in trouble because when he first started this game, he was right at the tail end of the last.
What do you mean he got himself in trouble? He's made out like a bandit with the deal.
Jesus, Chief, can I finish?
Yeah,
He got himself in trouble because he believed he could play the doubling into leverage game. He was at the tail end of a generally rising rate environment. He very nearly blew up, and his old man bailed him out. All right? Now, as it turned out, when his old man bailed him out, it was essentially right at the top of where that corner occurred. And so then he was now on the declining rate side into the later 1980s and into the 1990s. And by the way, he was dumb enough to get in over his skis a second time into a favorable environment for the way he runs his business. But then his old man dies.
I hate it when it happens when the guy who's bailing you out croaks.
Well, he dies and leaves you $1 billion. All of a sudden, you're bailed out again, right?
Yeah, that'll do it.
Well, that'll work. So, you know, but here's the important point. Then, all the way through this, he borrows $1 billion at 8%, and 5 years later, he can roll it at 5%. And so, therefore, it never has to be paid off, ever. And our government and the businesses in this country have done the exact same thing. Now, this sort of so-called economic theory has gone on for 40 years. And you just...
We're not the first. They used to do it in the 1600s. Every time it's happened.
I understand. And guess what? They got blown up every time the cycle turned on them, too. Now you just had Palo Alto. Did you see this thing on Palo Alto Network CEO yesterday?
I just saw something this morning. What is it?
Okay. Nikesh Ora. Gee, is that another Indian? Probably. Says that in order to get AI adoption into corporate America, to have it actually become a operating part of corporate America, the cost of the service, in other words, the token cost, has to come down by 90%. Now, what have I warned about for the last several years with regards to this AI nonsense?
Hey, before we go to break, could you do me one big favor?
Sure.
We got 5 minutes before we go to break. How does you keep talking about the only word person who talks because you're knowledgeable about it, the cost of AI? I have a couple of clients that work for big companies, and one of them is Lou's obviously saying it's really helping him in his law firm, and one of my clients works for McDonald's. And says they've used it there, and it's kind of helped out. Could you explain to me and everybody else, if PTI was, you know, Merrill Lynch or something, and we want to use AI, who do we pay? How much does it cost, and what do we get? When you keep saying you cost, I mean, most people think of AI, you kick up Google, and you go, okay, what's the, you know, what's the earnings per share of Micron? And I guess that's AI. I don't pay anything for it. But what does it actually cost somebody to use it in an industrial size? Or could you fill us in on that? Because I have no idea, and I bet most of our clients or listeners don't either.
Well, that's the entire problem, is that if you buy a subscription, which is
what does that cost?
Well, that's you pay for tokens, all right? So, gee, guess what?
So Ivy Tech is paying that. That's why Kevin can use it all the time.
Right. So okay. Why? By the way, why do we do it? Why do we sell tokens instead of simply denominated in dollars? The same reason the casino has you bet in chips instead of $100 bills.
Okay, or be basic for us. If I'm Ivy Tech or I'm McDonald's or I'm a law firm, I send these guys, send somebody $10,000 a month, and I can use AI and dig in everybody's stuff all month, or do I pay?
No.
Okay.
You send them $1,000 or $10,000, whatever it is, and you get X number of tokens.
All right, what exactly is a token?
A token is just a unit of computing. Okay. Now,
so it's sort of like the cloud in that regard. You're borrowing.
It's very much like the cloud, except that they value it in tokens, because dollars is not, you know, that way you'd actually add it all up while you're doing it. With the tokens, it's abstracted, so you are tempted not to. Now, by the way, my blog, the primary system runs on a cloud machine, all right, a DigitalOcean, and they denominate my consumption in dollars. So if I log into my console, I see how many dollars I've consumed this month so far. Okay. And if I allocate more resources than what I currently have allocated, then the number of dollars I consume per unit of time
goes up. It's like how much you downloaded from your phone.
Well, kind of, sort of, yeah. So, but when you put a query into the system, okay, when you do that, that query consumes some of these tokens. When you run out, you have to buy more of them.
Right? Right, so they give you, it's like the thing on your TV. You've watched your 5 porn movies. If you want to watch your 6, you got to send us some more dough, something like that.
You got to send us some more. Right, exactly. So, but here is the basic problem with this. If I'm building a data center to run these hyperscaler stuff, okay, these huge data centers that consume ridiculous amounts of power and water and all these GPUs from NVIDIA or whoever. Somehow, the amount of money I bill out to people, whether it's denominated in dollars or tokens, I have to have a positive return on investment from that, or ultimately I'm going to go bankrupt. All right? I have to pay the capital cost of building the place, putting the equipment.
Well, if you had a guess,
power and a water bill and everything else.
If you had a guess, what do you think? Say Lou's got a firm. I mean, I never asked him, but say there's 40 lawyers there and 50 other people, or McDonald's. What do you suppose Lou's firm is paying per month to somebody? What do you suppose McDonald's is paying?
Well, I don't know in that case, but I do know in some, because I have some contacts and some people that there is an awful lot of. Many of these software people that are using these things for code development are blowing through $1,000 a seat per month or more.
A seat? What does that mean?
A coder, a person.
So every coder is spending $1,000 on AI, or helping them out.
And that has come up as a, hey, by the way, we're capping you here, and you have to go to your manager or SVP in order to get a sign off to exceed it, because people are blowing through that. You've had a couple of reports in the media of companies that do coding and things like this that have gone through their entire budgeted amount for the year in 3 months.
Well, but I guess the question is, we got a break, but is the question, is it worth it that, okay, their budget was $1 million for the year. They pissed away the whole million in 3 months, but did it save them $2 million, I guess is the question.
Well, that's where the problem comes from, because what is being repeatedly demonstrated is that because the way these AIs are actually getting their information is by scraping the internet generally. Okay, that's what all these lawsuits are about.
Well, they're stealing the stuff from somebody else, basically, right?
They're stealing it from someone else. The problem is not everything that they're stealing is accurate. So as a result, let's say that you're an attorney and you use it to write a brief, okay, instead of having a person going to law school do it, right? One of your interns or whatever. Okay, so the AI comes back with this in 5% of the time it would take the intern to do it. The problem is now I have to read the entire thing and fact check every single assertion and every case citation that's in there, because if it's full of crap and I file that and get caught, I'm screwed.
It's like spell check if it's the wrong word.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, except that in cases like coding, you build something, it appears to run, but it's full of security holes. Because no human actually put that together and thought about it. All right? So the concept behind this is such a huge labor saving. In fact, this is so wonderful that Elon Musk has said that productivity is going to go so high that we'll be able to pay you to basically sit at home and watch porn and play with yourself. $100,000 a year for every person in America. All right, listen, if you believe any of that sort of crap,
you deserve the
99% loss you're going to get in your portfolio.
S&P futures down 3, Nasdaq futures down 100. We'll do a quick break, Carl. We'll be right back because I want to go. A lot of stuff. Hey, plus, you got a chance here. You can use AI if you want to cheat. What exactly is a Lumaline chronograph? Oh, nothing on the tip of his head. He's digging into, he's phoning a friend right now. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 1. NASDAQ Futures down 89. We were up a bunch yesterday. Coming back a little bit today, but not horrible. We've got our flip where Meta is now up today, Microsoft's up, and Micron's down. Yesterday was exactly the opposite. Micron was up $70 and some of these other guys were down. I just got the I don't understand how all that works, but maybe Carl will educate me. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 813, 1.2%, Hang Seng up 144.6%, Shanghai down 40. That's a full 1%. Sure, why Hang Seng and Shanghai are going different. This stablecoin issuer Circle just got the green light to operate as a bank. Boy, Carl, put that on a list for things to talk about. What does that mean? When you're a bank, give me a break. DAX up 3, call that flat. FTSE up 13, pretty flat. CAC down up 5, flat. Evidently, all the French guys were watching their game yesterday and they're all hungover. Well, that's okay. The French looked pretty good yesterday in the soccer. Bonds unchanged, 4.54, but above the 4.5 number that we worry about. Oil up 3 cents, but 72.11. It's up from the 67, but it's nowhere near the 80 or 90 when the war started. It's down. Everybody's convinced it's going to be over pretty soon. I sure hope they're right. I don't know. Gold down $25, 41.15. Silver down 74 cents, $60 even. Foreign exchange, and this has been a big number. Euro is unchanged at 114. Same thing with the British pound. Actually, the yen has gone up a little bit. The dollar has gone down. They're under 162 now, 160, 185. And again, that is an ongoing problem because those guys, we owe them, $900 billion or something. Crypto up $1,200, 64, 425, up $5,000 since Trump said he loves crypto. Ricky, what do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 here in Chicago. We're looking at 72 degrees right now with a high of 78. Times of clouds and sun. Patchy morning fog will reduce visibility today, and tonight will be humid, cloudy, and becoming clear later in the night with a low of 69 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 93 degrees right now with a high of 112. Hot with hazy sun, danger of dehydration and heat stroke due to extreme heat, and tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 90 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's is 10 minutes. We're looking at 24 minutes. Iman Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 25 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th is 20 minutes. And lastly, Inbound Stevenson from 294 is 25 minutes. On sports, Cubs lose to Orioles yesterday 3-2, and White Sox lose to Red Sox 2-1. Diamondbacks beat Padres yesterday as well 3-1. And today we got Cubs at Reds at 6:10 p.m., Athletics at White Sox 6:40 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Dodgers at 9:10 p.m. Lastly, for the FIFA World Cup, yesterday France beat Morocco 2-0 and advanced to the semifinals. Its rival will be determined today with Spain facing Belgium at 2 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
Carl, two questions. I was digging through some sports stuff.
All right. Now, hold on a minute.
All right, I'm going to answer it again in case somebody didn't. Bob Powers fastball was tested at the Aberdeen Proving Ground using military Lumaline chronograph. What in God's name?
Okay, so the original purpose, by the way, you can still buy sort of, not that one, but devices that essentially are the same thing. People that shoot use them. And the purpose is to determine if you're working up hand loads or whatever have you for precision rifles, or you happen to be a military and are kind of interested in doing that kind of thing, it's a non-invasive way of determining how fast something's moving using light. Okay?
Okay.
Which, by the way, happens to work very well for baseballs.
Okay, but it picked it up when across... I picked it up when across the plate, not when it left his hand.
Right. Now, exactly, because that's, basically, it's the inner... If I know the length of a projectile, for example, and I can time when it interrupts and then stops interrupting a beam of light, then that timing tells me how fast it's moving. Well, same thing with a baseball, okay? Now, the problem with this is it's not all that accurate. But, of course, if I'm using it for profiling rifle rounds or whatever have you, it doesn't have to be exacting, okay? It just has to be close enough to serve purpose. For a baseball, I mean, if it's off, I mean, what's an acceptable error rate? 2 or 3%?
No, you got to be accurate today. If one guy's 105.2 and the other guy's 105.3, he's faster.
Well, the thing is, which is why they now all use radar guns, right? Because radar, it actually detects at the point of release, right? When it can see.
Well, the old radars didn't. The old radars picked it up halfway, and then some picked them up at the plate. The new one does.
The new ones do.
Yeah.
Right. So, by the way, the ball slows down as it goes through the air, right? Air resistance.
Yeah, like 10%.
Yeah, I mean it. You know the
well.
Velocity.
Since you asked the question, when Nolan Ryan's was timed in 1974, it was a Rockwell International radar system. The system captures the ball speed about 10 feet from home plate. So it what they use today, they use a StatCast systems track where it gets it right at the release point. But here's a question, even for you. Walter Johnson, 1914, a copper wire tunnel at a munitions lab. What in God's name was that?
I'm assuming that's the same. It would work on induction, okay? Which is the same sort of thing. I mean, a metallic thing. So now, my curious piece on that would be, how do you do that with a baseball, which doesn't?
Yeah, but a guy's throwing it. How do you do that?
Well, not only that, baseballs, cork and winding and a leather cover, right?
Yep.
And stitching. I mean, I wouldn't think, unless they substituted a baseball that had they take the cork out and put a metallic core in it, and therefore it can produce the induction effect.
You don't think they actually put a wire on the ball, do you?
Oh, but I wouldn't be surprised if they essentially used a ball that had same weight, same size, but it's got something in there that can perturb a magnetic field, because that's, that's, and again, what we're talking about here from a historical context is what this was used for in a military application, or nowadays in a sporting application, because people do buy chronographs for this. It's the same, by incidentally, they do the same sort of thing with golf balls now.
Oh, really?
Okay. Light. Yeah, I mean, you could buy one, that it, and if you go to one of those golf simulators, okay, that's, you know, you hit the ball into the net, the way, that's part of the way it works. Okay, and you can buy those as a person, and you know, you put the little thing behind your tee, and you know, then you hit the ball, and it's capable of detecting that. And those Garmin, I think, even makes them.
Yeah. Hey, I have my inflation calculation in front of me. I did on break, so I don't want to lose it. This, you know, we talk about what went on for really the last. You know, that's why I can't really bitch so much at Trump about it, because they've all done it. I mean, and the promise, well, here, I mean, this is the little stat I have here, the one that you like to rail about. You can actually go back, the people in St. Louis, the Fed Bank of St. Louis, they will actually, if you want to know what the CPI is for like one line on the whole list, they'll actually give it to you. Well, if you look at from January 2000 to May of 2025, which is the last month, if you look at the medical services line, they've got essentially medical costs up 99%. Let's say it doubled, okay? It's up 99 points. It's actually up, if you look at just the medical services line, it's up 2.32.
Right.
So it's up. It's actually gone up. They've got it up almost doubling. It's actually gone up like 2.5 times.
Yeah.
And that's by their. So if you compound that with the fact that they only say it's 6% of the basket instead of 21. So if you went back and if you just did this little calculation, it probably would add, if you move that to 20 or 18 or 19 or something, it would really add almost 1% a year
to the
inflation. To the
actual number.
The actual number. So if you did that and you look how close, you know, our real growth is to inflation anyway since 2000, I'm going to say you could make a real strong argument that most people have been in a recession since 2000.
Real growth is negative.
Real growth is negative since 2000.
Right. But Chief, this is what happens when the cycle starts to reach its end. I had lots of ugly things to say about Ben Bernanke during the, you know, the lead up to and during the crash in 08, all right? But I will give the man credit for showing up at his Humphrey Hawkins thing and telling Congress point blank that I can play games with your permission and with your, you know, with your involvement for about 10 years. But that's as much rope as there is in terms of the slack in the system for this to be continued.
Okay, so to back up on this, when he says he can play, he can help with the game, if the unlike you and I, Carl, if we're going to say next year, you know, our budget is we're going to spend $2 trillion, and oh, by the way, the taxes right now are $1.8 trillion, looks to me like we're $200 billion short, right?
Well, right.
But now when we write the check, somebody with the extra $200 billion, somebody, there has to be money from someplace. Well, you can get it one of three ways. You can borrow it, which we do a lot, and now we're pissing off all the people we owe money to, but that's another story. You can say, well, we better raise the taxes, $200 billion. That would make sense, but nobody wants that to happen. Or how about we just print it? it's through credit in other ways, but basically you're making it up by
There's only one way.
Yeah. Well, but
it's all admitted credit.
Okay, but whatever it is, it's made up money that counts, right? So the problem with that is you when you do that, you inflate everything, and all of a sudden everybody, some people win and some people lose.
Now hold on a minute. As this cycle starts to go, right, which it has been now for quite some time, All right.
Well, the lead time is dramatic, Carl. And we're not there yet, right?
No. Here's the thing. Recognition in the market. You know, people get imbued with this idea that trees grow to the sky and then beyond that to the moon and Mars, right? Which of course in the real world never actually happens. But this is what they believe. Now think about what you just had happen there. Okay, Microsoft, you know, nice little company, right? Had a nice stock price run over the last, you know, 20 years or so, right? Trading.
It was 35 hours after 2000 for about 8 years, and all of a sudden started to move.
All of a sudden it takes off, and oh, by the way, as of this morning, it's being quoted around 387. Okay. One of their product lines is the Xbox Game.
By the way, they were 520.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
One of their product lines is the Xbox gaming system, okay? Which by the way, I'm not into doing that sort of thing, but an awful lot of people are, obviously, because they sell a lot of these.
542.07 was the high.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so guess what these guys did? They just fired a huge percentage, and numerically a large number, of Americans that worked in their Xbox division. Okay. They fired 1,600 people. Guess how many H-1Bs they have approved. By the way, that 1,600 is out of 4,800 in that division. That's a monstrous percentage.
That's incredible. Right. So the other 3,200 people.
Wait a minute. This year, Microsoft has been approved for 2,273 H-1B visas.
I don't. That whole thing is such a mystery to me. So
why did that happen? And the reason is because those guys are cheaper.
Well, but they're also indentured.
And they're bound to Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm saying they're indentured servants.
They're indentured servants. And oh, by the way,
let's explain this to everybody. An H-1B, the company gets somebody to approve, and somebody comes from, it used to be China, and I'll say it's India, so it could be anywhere. But they come here and they have to work for Microsoft at, say, 100 grand a year, but the going rate out there could be 125. But the weird part is,
actually, the going rate's closer to 150.
But the thing of it is, if Carl and Chief have a place down the block, and we say, God, I had a beer last night, and this Indian or Chinese or wherever the hell he's from, dude seems pretty darn smart, I'm willing to pay him the full 150. I can't do it. He's locked into Microsoft, sort of like he's on a plantation, for God's sake.
Well, he is on a plantation,
yeah.
And now it gets worse. The chick who did this is in fact an Indian national. These people have ended up, now some of them are naturalized, but these people have ended up in management roles across this industry. You take a look there are charts out there. It's unbelievable how much this is. Now, these are companies that are publicly traded in the United States and are allegedly U.S. funds.
Carl, could you opine?
Well, let me tell you why that's being done.
I understand, but before, just in terms of, I'll say in the whatever area I'm talking, people are not equivalent. I mean, there's
no.
I will say one thing. Sometimes people from other places, some of the Hispanic people that work, they sure as hell work a lot harder than the average white kid now, but that's another story.
Well, when you're an indentured servant, you work hard.
You bring people over, and whoever you are, you may know the language, but it takes you a while to get acclimated there. You don't know the build. For somebody who actually is working hard, somebody here, whatever color he is at your place, knows the place, and he's making 150, and you basically shit can the guy or lady, and you bring somebody over here. Maybe he went to school here, which means he's pretty already acclimated. I think is part of the issue. But somebody shows up, and it's 100. How long? This is a really tough question, but maybe you can answer it. How long before that person, even with the quote education, can give you the 150 grand worth the other person did 2 months ago? It must take a while. Nobody can drop into something and learn it.
Well, hold on a minute. There's a bigger problem with this. Okay, if you've noticed the crapification of basically everything, including all the software you use and the forcing of you into subscription models, okay.
Well, you know more about that than me. I know that.
Well, this is all part of the same piece. Okay,
it's
all.
I know Excel. They want you to pay per month. You can't just buy the damn thing.
Well, and okay, here's the reason for that. First off, what has happened within these tech firms is that they have exhibited enough in-group preference at this point on the H-1Bs that now most of them are actually having their conversations in something other than English, which means that if you're an American, you're effed in terms of being able to actually participate.
Well, there's so many of them, it's actually swung the other way. I would not have guessed that.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, it gets worse than that. In many of these cases, these people are bitten out. I'm probably not true for Microsoft, because Microsoft's big enough to have enough infrastructure to do this all internally. Okay, all the paperwork and everything else. Even though they're scamming, and by the way, that's a felony, because you're attesting that there's no qualified American who can do this job. That is perjury. It's a federal offense, and you're supposed to go to prison for it. But we don't lock anybody up for white collar crimes.
No, God, no.
Nobody ever goes to jail.
How much of the
By the way, they just John Deere just supposedly settled this. Your tractor doesn't work. You have to call the dealer because nobody else can get the software to make the piece that you replace talk to the computer. Okay. Incidentally, that is a black letter Sherman and Clayton violation.
Absolutely.
No, and zero people went to prison.
Well,
zero money was refunded to the farmers who've been screwed for the last 10 years.
Bring it down to the blue collar level. When I told you something, I get my truck aligned, and I was waiting.
No, you told me about that. Yeah.
Well, now, all right, but the question is, the $500,000 at the Firestone place paid for the new alignment machine. Did they have to buy that software from Toyota? Do they have to buy one for Ford, one for Chevy, one for everybody else to run the damn thing?
Well, yeah, this is exactly the problem. Okay, so supposedly this so-called settlement is that now individual customers, i.e., a farmer that has a combine, will be able to buy the software that the John Deere dealer has, and therefore be able to do these jobs. Okay,
what's he going to do with it?
Well, he's going to use it once. The entire problem is he's going to have to pay what the dealer would have to pay, which, forget about it, okay? You know who Snap-on is, right? The aftermarket auto, they make really, not as good a tools as they used to, but because a lot of their...
They used to have the calendar with the good-looking girls on it.
Yeah, they did, and pretty much every mechanic in every shop had a toolbox full of their stuff.
And a calendar above the toolbox.
Duh. Here's the thing. If I go to Mazda and I tell Mazda I want to buy the MDS interface, which is the diagnostic interface that the dealer uses, the MDI interface, for enough money, they'll sell it to me. The problem is, it isn't a standalone thing. I then have to buy the subscription. It basically just like you do for Office 365, right? In order for this thing to be useful. Now, if I'm running a Mazda dealership and I've got 50 Mazda cars coming in there a day, this economic model maybe works. If I am paying that amount of money for a license and I got one car in my garage...
Well, I'm saying, I could see an independent mechanic doing it, but why would one guy own one tractor, why would he do it?
No, wait a minute. Maybe or maybe not, Chief, because does he only work on Mazdas?
No, I'm saying, I said maybe. But how does one guy with one tractor do it?
The settlement is worthless, okay, for that reason. Now, Snap-on makes a box that will talk to essentially almost any automobile and run their diagnostic stuff, 90% of it. The 10% that they can't run, you end up having to go back to the dealer for, like calibrating sensors when your windshields are placed and stuff like this. The box is called a Modus. I have a friend of mine that has one. He He used to do collision work. He hasn't updated it in quite a while because the updates are insanely expensive.
Without a doubt.
The only reason Snap-on can get that kind of money for what amounts to an Android tablet that costs $100 to manufacture is because if you actually tried to buy one, the same interface, for GM, Ford, Chrysler, Mazda, Fiat.
Well, my guy doesn't buy the last couple of years because he goes, I never get cars in here that are that young. They go into warranty.
And the thing is, though, is that the Modus is insanely expensive, and unless you're a professional mechanic, you'd never pay for that. But the only reason Snap-on can sell it for that kind of money is because if you tried to do it through the dealer, it costs five times as much.
All right, hey,
you have to buy five of them.
We got 4 minutes. Let's shift. How long can the Japanese yen stay at this level without causing them a bit of a problem? Interest rates have snuck up. They're over five, way over five
on the
50
bond,
on the long bonds. But what you were mentioning earlier, Carl, you and I. I'll use the term, I don't know how many people we gotta be careful we're not Cassandra. You know, from Greek mythology, Cassandra could see the future, but she could never talk anybody into doing anything about it. So all it did was aggravate her. You know, we can't be doing it. We should be doing that because we're seeing it, okay? But there has been some sort of movement in some sort of recognition of what you're talking about. But it's all bleeped up. It has to do with now if the buffoons in Congress and the administration, and by the way, they're not dumb people, but collectively, they act like buffoons sometimes. The new mantra is every bill you pass has to show that over the next 10 years it gets you more taxes than you lose. And then you've got
which by the way is worthless because no Congress can bind the next one.
Right. Well, okay, but I'm saying
per the Constitution.
But the Trump first term, I'll say idiotic tax cuts. The idea was that people are going to save so much money and become so more productive that the taxes are going to go up. Total bullshit. And then Biden comes through with his infrastructure program. Oh, guess what? Everybody in Inglewood is going to have five bars on their phone. They'll be so much more productive. The taxes are going to go up. Bullshit. So, but when, now you start lying to yourself, but at least there's somewhat of a recognition that we better be doing things accretive and not the other way because we are running out of dough. Now, they're 10 years behind you and me, Carl. But then again, the reason why they're 10 years behind is the people that really support them and they care about are making out like a bandit during this whole mess.
Well,
you're not going to get the medical companies bitching about inflation on medical stuff.
No, the only way you're going to, but here, Chief, the only way you can bring balance back into the system in a generally rising rate environment where every rollover costs you more money instead of less, the only way you can do it is to take all the monopolists out there and literally put rounds in their head. Now, you can do it in a business sense. In other words, you go bankrupt.
Yeah.
Okay. Or you can do it in a physical sense and people start shoving shotguns up people's butts. All right.
Well, there's...
Now, the problem is if you don't do the first, you're going to get the second because the ability to continue to hand out, for example, Section 8 and SNAP, which is a huge way to prevent people from having to pay living wages to folks that are on the lower end of the skill level, right? And capacity is a bell curve. Duh.
You got to get, we got to dash if, here. You got to get the 59 number that people are contributing by working.
Got to be up to 62 or 63.
If it's up to 62 or 63, a lot of these problems sort of go away. But, you know, but again, the thing that, you know, we all bring different stuff to the table on this show. The thing that I keep trying to bring in is I think that these numbers on the inflation is so friggin' high. I mean, this is a sociological change, and economics is a social science, the one I took anyway. When you got in the 60s or 70s, if Carl's uncle and Carl's, you know, maybe you sit on a sofa for 2 days before your family get pissed at you, couldn't sit there a month in those days, he'd get you a job as whatever, a bridge tender or something. You'd go down to the precinct captain or somebody and in return for, you know, working a boating booth for him, they'd get you a job. But you were expected to show up.
Actually do the job.
And plus, no matter what the job was, even if you were I won't say a stock boy, but if you're any kind of a manager or even at a local jewel, and you didn't, you know, you didn't gamble away, you could afford, you weren't Daddy Warbucks, you could afford a place to live, and oh, by the way, you could afford a car getting you back and forth to work, and the license for the car. A job meant you were sort of okay. The big difference now, or one of the biggest difference, is the people who are, I won't say poor, but are having trouble meeting ends meet, most of them are working.
Well, Chief, yeah, here's the thing. When I the first real W-2 type job that I had, programming computers, all right, for a little dinky boutique company in the Chicago area, paid just over $20,000 a year.
So that's $10 an hour.
And well, it was salary.
Well,
okay, so
it was 2,000 hours in the year, or used to be.
Well, guess what? The expectations were if you had to be there on Saturday because we needed to ship, you didn't get overtime for that, right? However, from that, I was able to rent an apartment, have a car. Wasn't a good car, but it was a car. It ran. I was able to put gas in the car. I was able to have insurance, buy the tags for it, put food in the reefer. Not steak every night and lobster, but food.
You know where all the all-you-can-eat buffets were?
Pay the power bill.
Yep.
Okay. And have a modest amount of money left over to chase some skirt. As a young man, the last was sort of important.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so...
And if you didn't show up, they wouldn't be happy.
And there you go. So there it was. And you know, the local drinking establishments were... We're pleased that I was able to do this, and so was everybody else, right? Because you spent the money in the economy. It is literally impossible to do that today.
Right.
All right? It is literally impossible. Not figuratively impossible, literally impossible. Now, I had zero public assistance support in this. No Section 8, no food stamps, none of... Zero. All of it came from my earnings after taxes, okay? And I pay taxes like everybody else because it was a W-2 job. They were taking out my check. The reality of it is that balance has to come back, and the only way to do it is for prices to collapse. And yet...
I would agree.
Everything you hear is aimed at...
We gotta go, but
how
you do realize,
to do that.
You do realize that my... argument that there is another way is getting weaker by the year.
No, really?
Well, I still say if we ratcheted back 10 years when I first met you, I had a fighting chance. I don't know if I do anymore.
You don't have a fighting chance. And the change in the rate environment is going to force that outcome. Now we can either do it voluntarily, or we can do it with violence.
The problem is,
and one of the two is going to happen.
Right, the only we got to dash, but the only issue I have with your way... Your prognosis is if all of a sudden the market, instead of being S&P at 751, is 300 6 months from now, an awful lot of good people are getting hurt in the meantime. If we could only hurt the people that were deserving,
Chief,
I'd be happier with your solution. But it's not. They'll be out smelling like a rose.
Everyone. Everyone who has profited from cranking the leverage turn is not a good person who deserves to be shielded from the impact of what they've done.
We absolutely have to dash. And what I'm saying is, the person that you and I know that won't protect his portfolio that we happen to like, he's going to get hurt more. And somehow we'll find out.
Of course, he's going to get hurt.
I know, but somehow we'll find out that Elon Musk and the rest of these guys knew about it. Got out the day before, but we're gonna find they're like the Mexican guys that knew when the place was gonna be devalued. You're not gonna hurt them, unfortunately.
Well, we'll see about that.
Maybe they're too arrogant that they will, but you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of nice people will get hurt as well, which I wish there was another way, but I don't know if there is.
There isn't.
All right, bud. On that happy note, S&P futures up $1. NASDAQ futures now down 124, which is interesting. Interest rates, again, creeping up today. I think put the 30-year at 6, put the 10-year at 5. I think we start seeing some issues there Carl, but I don't know. It'll be noticed, I think.
I think the noticing is going to happen all at once because everyone is still in the belief that somehow we can continue to play that game, and it's not.
It always does.
It does.
There's only so much you can fight with me on this because Rabbit and I had a bridge loan on a condo at 8.5%. 6 months later, it was 14. So I've got a nick in my behind from.
How many packs of Depends did you need until that healed up?
You know what though, not counting my labor, which of course I worked on the place for 3 months, we ended up breaking even, and I was able to pay. And I was never so happy to break even anything in my life. I paid off, I'd gotten a little bit of a loan, but mostly it was credit cards, which at the time were only 12% or something. But I got out of it, and we were whole, except for my time. But you know what? You had a lot of time when you're 20-some years old, right? SP futures up unchanged. NASDAQ down on 127. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.